This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. And I am definitely turning on the air conditioner today because it's warm in here. And in case you hear a little panting off to my right, that's Andy. I'm actually going home a little bit early today. And as it worked out, it was going to be easier for me to pick him up from the groomers than for my wife to pick him up from the groomers. So we are just leaving the groomers, which means I'm going to be traveling a little different route getting home. And we're trying to get the car cooled down. So maybe after we get going a little bit, we'll get the car cooled down and we'll turn down the air to where it's not so loud in here. It is 93 today and it's climbing. It's supposed to get over 100 today. We are supposed to set a record today. So anyways, this is episode 170. And I am joined by my trusty sidekick, Andy the dog, today. We'll see if we make it all the way home without an expression from Andy. We'll see. He's a pretty good old dog, and he is getting older these days. I think he's 10 or 11 or 12 or something. I don't know. My wife, she's the one who knows all of that stuff. Our eldest dog, I think, is 15, and I think Andy's a couple of years younger than Abby. So, anyways, Andy and Abby, those are our dogs. Everything's going fine at work. Made some good progress this week, learning MVC3 and Razor and all that kind of good stuff. But we have gotten to a point in that project where really, really need to talk to some of the stakeholders. Oh, this is probably my wife. Just a second. She's been having some difficulties. It is my wife. Hold on a second. Hi, sweetie. Okay, that's fine. Okay. All right. Okay, bye. We're juggling schedules today. Our daughter had some things she needed to do, so my wife has Clara, our granddaughter, and so I didn't know I was going to be leaving early, but when I walked out, I thought, you know, you should really call your wife. There was just something that said, you should call Lynette, you should call Lynette. So I called Lynette, and sure enough, she was trying to get a bunch of stuff coordinated, and so I just volunteered to pick up Andy, which is why I have a passenger. The first dog passenger in the podcast. Anyways, okay. Okay, so everything's going fine. The writing's going fine. It's fine. Everything is fine. In fact, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to actually go home and do some more writing. This week, I think I mentioned it last week, Brené Brown. It was the talker's name on the TED Talk. And this TED Talk is from a little bit ago. And I may do her subsequent TED Talk next week because I think she is knocking at the edges of some really important things. In my opinion, she hasn't moved all the way through them yet. And I don't know that she ever will because of where she's starting in her philosophy, but in a lot of the things that she says, I'm listening to it and thinking, yep, 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 yep. So in this particular talk, she did a talk on the power of vulnerability. And it was pretty interesting. She started out by saying that she's been a researcher, that she loves research, and she had pursued a degree in social work, social research, something. And one of the things that really lit her up was that the degree she was pursuing was in the very messy human affairs of sociology, but she was in some class with some professor who said, if you can't measure it, it doesn't exist. And she went up and she said to him, wait, is that really true? Because that's the type of person she's always been. She's always wanted to get out her measuring stick. She wants to see it. She wants to deconstruct it. She wants to understand it and then control it. And so that sort of really lit her up anew in the field she was in, because she didn't necessarily up to that point view her line of work as something like that. It was something she enjoyed, but there was always this messiness about social research. And so this really made her think, okay, this is for me. This is the thing. Because she wanted to be able to understand those things that were messy and make them not messy. You know, really kind of hack them down, find out the stuff that's important, in her words, and lay out the code for everyone to see so that she'd get this stuff solved. Okay. And she has a really nice sense of humor. Because I was going to say, at one point she paused and she said, of course, you know this isn't going to work out for me well. And she told some really cute stories about her line of work and speaking and those kind of stuff. Anyways, I'm a little short on time today because of the route I'm taking home, because I picked up Andy. So she decided she would start with connection. Human connection. She said, because when you've been a social worker for 10 years, she said, you realize that connection is why we are all here. It's what gives purpose and meaning to our lives. And I thought, yes. I mean, connection, relationship, it's basically the same thing. And she was talking about is that ability to feel connected is how we are neurobiologically wired, that we don't do well just by ourselves outside relationships. She said there are some people who do, a small percentage of people who don't have a need to be connected. But she said those are the type of people you really don't want to be around. So she decided that she would study connection. And she said, you know, one of the interesting things about studying connection is that when you get people talking about connection, the first thing they start to talk about is their disconnection. She said, you get people talking about how that their boss praised them on 37 different other points of how great they were, but they had this one area of improvement. You know, that they talk to you about the time that they were jilted by a lover, that they talk to you about the time they were reprimanded, all those things that cause them to feel disconnected. That's the first thing that bubbles up to the top. And she wanted to find out why this was. She got about 6 weeks into her research when she ran into this thing that kept pushing people towards disconnection. And what she concluded that thing was shame. That her definition of shame was, it was the fear of disconnection. It is the fear that if somebody knows this thing about who I really am, that they wouldn't value me as worthy of connection. And so what she decided to do was figure out why we all carry around this shame. And of course, this is where my ears start perking up. And I had already started perking up when she was talking about connection, because I'm really big on relationship. And she decided that the big underpinning of this connection, or of shame, this feeling that I'm not good enough, I'm not rich enough, I'm not pretty enough, I'm not whatever blank, the thing that was underneath all of that was, in her words, excruciating vulnerability. That in order for us to have connection, we have to allow ourselves to be seen. Okay, well, that was a really interesting idea, and I'll come back to that some more. So, the more she thought about that, the more she kind of hated it. Because she said, I hate vulnerability. So she decided to get out her little measuring stick, and she was going to beat that idea back, that she was going to spend a year to deconstruct shame, to understand how vulnerability works, and then she was going to outsmart it so that she wouldn't have to be vulnerable. It was at this point that she looked at the audience and said, of course, you know this isn't going to work out well. So she starts pulling out all of the people who had a sense of connection, who were well connected. She pulled all those people out of her research, and she started going through it, looking for common denominators to figure out how this all was working so that she would know how to deconstruct it. And she said she got her manila folder out, and she said, I'm really big on manila folders and organizing things. And she wrote up at the top of her manila folder, she said, I have to think of how I'm going to describe these people. And the first word that came to her mind, some would call it a whisper, the first word that came to her mind was wholehearted. That these individuals were wholehearted. And that these people felt worthy of connection because they had a strong sense of love and belonging. So she was looking at those people and trying to figure out what was going on with those people. And what she says she figured out is that all of those people had something important in common. And that is that they all had a healthy attitude about vulnerability. That they were people who were willing to let go of who they thought they should be for who they were. That they were willing, they had the courage to allow people to see who they were. And it was out of that vulnerability then that they were able to embrace connection. Now, she went on to say, this was not an idea that she liked at all. She said, these are the people that were willing to say, I love you first. They were willing to do things where there was no guarantee. They were willing, in her words, to breathe through waiting for the doctor to call you after a mammogram. They were willing to invest in a relationship, whether it worked out or not. That these people felt that their sense of worth, their sense of belonging, their ability to connect, felt that vulnerability was a key part of that. And it's not that they really enjoyed being vulnerable, or that vulnerability was completely terrible for them. They just recognized that vulnerability was important in order for them to live a full life, and they were willing to put themselves out, to take risks, to take chances, that they might be humiliated and they might be embarrassed, but in the process of that, they enjoyed connection. So, this is where her talk started getting interesting from her own personal viewpoint, because she says, so my mission to control and predict how to live turned up the answer that the way to live is with vulnerability and stop controlling and stop predicting. And apparently, when she jokes about the fact that she really likes to control things and predict things and measure things and get... that she meant she really, really liked that idea. Because in the process of coming to this conclusion, she said, I had a little breakdown. She came to a point where she was having trouble processing this idea, and she actually went and got a therapist. And she was funny because she said, I was talking to my friends and saying, I think I'm going to have to go see a therapist. And they were like, ooh, we would want to be your therapist. And they were all like, and don't bring your measuring stick, because apparently this was a big deal in her life, this measuring stick business. But anyways, and she was funny. She talked about getting to her therapist and talking. But she said it took a year, but she eventually worked through, and she said that it was a really, really good experience for her to learn to embrace vulnerability. I'm getting my mail. One moment. Good, 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 good. Okay. How you doing, Andy? We're almost home, buddy. All right. So... one moment, let me just get backed up here a little bit, and then we'll finish up. So, this was all very, 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 very interesting to me. And then she started talking, after she started talking about going to her therapist and kind of working through her things, she said after she got through that, then she started looking at how we... as a nation, deal with vulnerability. And this was very interesting because in her opinion, what we do, and I have to agree with this, I'm backing into my garage, so I'm going to start talking louder. What we do is we numb vulnerability. We find something when we're feeling uncomfortable, when we aren't sure what's going to happen next, when we want to feel safe, that what we do is we numb vulnerability. Okay, we're going to have to see how long we can actually sit in this car and talk because it's going to warm up. And we'll see how long Andy is willing to just sit here. And she talked about the fact that we are the most in-debt, obese, addicted, medicated adult cohort in U.S. history. And she said the problem is what she's learned from her research is that you cannot selectively numb emotion. And so if you're not willing to live with the fear and discomfort and you begin to distract yourself, that you end up numbing everything. If you with alcohol, for instance, and with drugs and with entertainment, that you just end up in this numb place where you're safe, but you're not vulnerable, but you're not really experiencing life. And she said the other thing that we do is that we try to make everything that's uncertain certain. She had an interesting idea that she said religion has gone from a belief in faith and mystery to a certainty. I'm right, you're wrong, shut up. That's actually pretty interesting. You know what? I'm going to have to turn the car back on and open the garage door because I'm not quite done. And poor Andy's panting. So we'll do this. Anyways, so that was very, very, very interesting. So her conclusion was this. This is what I've found. To let ourselves be seen, deeply seen, vulnerably seen, is to love with our whole hearts, even though there's no guarantee, and that's really hard. And I can tell you as a parent, that's excruciatingly different to practice gratitude and joy in those moments of terror when we're wondering, can I love you this much? Can I believe in this passionately? Can I be fierce about this? Just be able to say stop, and instead of catastrophizing what might happen, to say I'm just so grateful, because to feel this vulnerable means that I'm alive. And the last, which I think is probably the most important, is to believe that we are enough, because when we work from a place, I believe, that says, I am enough, Then we stop screaming and start listening. We're kinder and gentle to people around us, and we're gentler and kinder to ourselves. Okay, I thought that was very good. Okay, so where does that all boil down to for me? Well, when I hear people talk about vulnerability, hear people talk about not being safe, what I really hear is quieting that voice of fear, quieting that voice of shame within us that comes from the flesh, that gins up all these possible scenarios of how we could be harmed to build a barrier around us so that we are not connected to others, to make us believe that we are not strong enough to deal with the outcomes of being involved with someone who might not be safe. Just today, I was talking with some cohorts today at work, and we got on this topic, I said, because I'm doing the podcast on this, and I mentioned a story about how one day at my major clients, I had come out of the office, and it was really hot, and this large gentleman was walking across the parking lot, sweating and huffing as he was walking. And as I got into my car, he was walking out of the parking lot, and a little whisper said, "You should really offer him a ride." And so I drove around and drove up to him. I said, "Sir," I said, "can I give you a ride somewhere?" And he said, "Oh, that'd be great." And I was telling him, the poor guy was so big, he barely fit into my car, and I was apologizing. "Sir, I'm really sorry that this car is..." So he said, no, that's good. So he was going down to a local grocery store. So I took him down to the grocery store, and I said, I would wait for you until you're finished, and I would take you back home. I said, but I have a dinner appointment tonight, and I said, I have to be there at 5, and that's just a few minutes. So I probably said, no. He said, "You really helped me out." We had a really nice conversation, because I was willing to be vulnerable, and we were connected for just a few minutes, and it was good. It was really good to be able to do that. But you're not going to get that if you hear all the possible weird scenarios inside of your head that the flesh is dredging up. And I absolutely agree with her when she talks about the fact that to practice joy and gratitude in those moments when we're wondering, can I love this much? And to let ourselves be seen, deeply seen, that to love with our whole hearts. I mean, this, it's interesting because this last book, Acting, Grumpy Old Prophets Part 5, which is book 4, just to keep things as confusing as possible. Okay. Told that joke enough times, may have to retire that joke. So anyways, Grumpy Old Prophets, one of the focuses of this is going to be that when Christ left the earth, what he left us with was a mandate to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love others as yourself. To love. And maybe not try to solve all the mysteries of the universe and get every jot and tittle down about what we should believe and why we should believe it, but simply to love. And I absolutely do believe that this process of learning to love, denying the flesh, learning to listen to the Spirit, moving in the Spirit, because the closer you move into the Spirit, the more that love there is, because the Spirit will lead you to love. This process really does open up connections for you. It really does give you the opportunity to touch people, to have people touch you, to share your lives with them. And it really enriches your life. I was a little bit saddened at the end of her talk when she says, because when we work from a place, I believe, that says, "I'm enough," then we stop screaming and start listening. We're kinder and gentler to the people around us, and we're kinder and gentler to ourselves. And that's true. That is not the part that made me sad. That is absolutely true. As we move away from the flesh, as we quiet our hearts, as we listen, we move closer to the Spirit. But what saddened me was that she left the congregation, the audience, with that. Know that you're worthy. How are they supposed to know that? What is the thing that connects together in their brain and say, oh, hey, I'm worthy? In my belief system, what connects with our brain is that God loves us and that He has done everything to break down every barrier between us and Him. God is in us and He's whispering to us. And He's letting us know that everything's okay. And that's why, even if people do not call the name of Jesus, if they'll do things like practice meditation, where they'll just get quiet, that something changes in their mind, because deep in that stillness, they feel, they hear, they experience something that says, everything's okay. Everything will be all right. I really hope I was talking loud enough to get over this fan. But anyways, so that's the podcast for today. Andy, you did a good job. Yeah, there wasn't much barking or anything like that. Thank you for riding home with me today. Sometimes if you sing to Andy, he'll sing back. Maybe we'll try. Can you sing a little bit? That's a good boy. This is Phil Farron, and I have made it home.